Hey, queer friends, are you ready to be inspired? Welcome to Season 5 of Coming Out and Beyond, a podcast that shares stories from the LGBTQIA+ community. Here's your host, Anne-Marie Zanzel.
Hi, this is Anne-Marie Zanzel here, and welcome back to another episode of Coming Out and Beyond, LGBTQIA+ stories. I am so happy to welcome to the show today, Ben Green. Ben is the trans man, transgender advocate, and educator who has spoken internationally on topics surrounding transgender inclusion. After coming out in 15 in a small town, Connecticut, and giving a popular TEDx talk at Brandeis University, Ben has devoted his career to spreading empathy, education, and storytelling around the trans experience. He has spoken for companies, hospitals, schools, religious organizations, and government entities, sharing what it means to be transgender and how to show up as an ally. He is a fierce advocate for transgender youth, regularly speaking in their defense at the Missouri State Capitol. And when he is not speaking during working hours, he is delivering free presentations to parent support groups around the country and spending hours one-on-one with families of newly out transgender loved ones. He is passionate about educating others from a place of compassion, no matter where they're starting from, and lives by the catchphrase, "The only question I won't answer is the question you won't ask." Ben, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. I'm super excited to be here.
I'm excited to have you. So tell me your story.
Yeah. So let's see. I'm Ben Green. I use he, him pronouns. I came out at about 15 years old in small town Connecticut. There weren't really other trans people around me at that time. So that was really hard because I didn't even have the language to describe the feelings I was having. And then I'd actually come out as bisexual and been added to a secret Facebook group for LGBTQ teens across the state of Connecticut. There was no adult involvement because most small towns, every town in Connecticut is a small town. So all of those towns had, you know, maybe 2 to 5 queer students. And so we found each other. And so I got added to this Facebook group, had about 400 kids in it all over the state, just figuring out how to support each other. And one day I'm scrolling and I see somebody post something that says, "Hey, I'm coming out as transgender. Here's what that means to me." And I had this moment of like a wave crashing over me. And I was like, wow, everything that you said just made so much sense to me. And, you know, learning the word was kind of the final piece I needed to unlock that door. And so I realized I was trans, spent a little while figuring out what does masculinity mean to me? What name do I want to go by? All that good stuff. Was in the closet for about a year. And then I came out and became like the trans guy trademark. And I was I was teaching the health classes and leading the student group and, you know, helping write school policy and doing all this stuff that was at the time really exciting. And looking back on it, it was really challenging because I had to become an adult immediately. Overnight, I had to become perfectly well-spoken. I had to have the answers to every question. I had to be extremely patient, not a word that we typically associate with, you know, a 15-year-old, but I had to be that if I wanted to get support. And so I loved getting to be that. At the time, it gave me a lot of skills that I use now. And I decided when I went to college that I wanted to live by the motto, be the person you needed when you were younger. And so say that at the time, it felt like I was jumping out of a plane with a tarp and a sewing kit. And so now I have made my career into being the parachute factory. So I get to go to schools and to companies and to families to build those support systems so that trans kids or trans adults get to be supported by default rather than needing to build their support systems once they already need them. So I'm so fortunate that I've been able to make this my career and to get to just be trans and grow up because I got to see that so infrequently. So I love that I get to, you know, I got married last fall. Didn't really know trans people got married. And me and my wife are getting ready to talk about buying a house. And I'm just doing things that are like adult things that it never occurred to me I was going to get a chance to do because I had never seen TV shows or stories on the news about trans people being happy, normal adults. So I love that I get to be that. And it's been really meaningful. And now I'm getting ready to publish a book called My Child is Trans, Now What? And that's been my latest passion project because I feel like so many of the support guides out there are really focused on misery and grief and dysphoria and suicide statistics and don't really focus on trans stories. And most of them are not written by trans folks. So I love that I get to write mine from a trans perspective that really focuses on the joy that there is to be found while still honoring there are a lot of challenges that come up. There's a lot of transphobia in the world. You know, I live in St. Louis, Missouri. I'm very familiar with what that looks like. But I love that I get to highlight that trans people get to grow up, get to be happy, and that I get to fight to build a world where I know that's true for every single trans kid. So that's my story in a nutshell.
It's a nutshell. I know it's much more complicated than that. Mm-hmm. So I have a bunch of questions for you because we both are from Connecticut.
Yeah.
We both have grown up in small town Connecticut. We both came out of, even though I'm a lot older than you and can be your mom, I came out about the same time as you. And before we started talking, you know, we talked about how heteronormative Connecticut is, which is, and what we mean by that is that especially, and we were in very similar towns, Ben and I, although one was more suburban and one was more country, it had the same sort of upper middle class wealth factor to it. And I worked in his old hometown, actually, so I actually know it. So one of the things is that when we talk about heteronormativity, we mean, you know, man, woman, married, kids. And then the kids often are expected to leave certain kinds of lives. College, especially in the two towns we're from, super important for, like, you know, it's like where's your kid going to college? Mm-hmm. And the better college they get into, the more status it is for the parents and, you know, all those things like that. What I'm really surprised about is your high school and, like, mm-hmm. how they tried to write policy and tried to embrace who you were. Tell me about that, because that doesn't, as we know, like what just happened with Next Benedict, things like that don't happen. So how did that all come about? And also, by the way, Ben, I found my people on a Facebook group too. And it was a secret hidden Facebook group that you had to know somebody, and it's women coming out later in life. And when I entered that group, I understand that moment because all of a sudden I had people saying things I had only thought in my head. And I had only thought that, like, I was the only one. But I thought I was, you know, and I couldn't. And until I heard that language and I heard people talking about those things, I finally was able to accept who I always was. And it surprises me is because you're an older Gen Z. Like, and so many of the Gen Zs are embracing the queer community, but even you 10 years ago had a real hard time finding what that was. So school, parents, like, and also because I think of you guys, because I have a Gen Z, I think of you guys as people that have had the exposure to visibility. And so that is why that so many people are embracing, you know, the queer community, you know, 30% with the Gen Zs. But here you are sitting before me saying, you know, 10 years ago, I didn't have that. So I'd love to hear all about that.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think my school, I am always so grateful that they were willing to meet me with kindness and curiosity, even if there are things I wish had gone differently. The fact that I was safe in my school and that my, you know, teachers were calling me the right name, that was huge. And that, you know, having even one supportive adult in your life is like life-saving for trans kids and for queer kids overall. So I was really fortunate that the structure of my school was really supportive. In terms of the students, I always joke that I had two entirely separate coming out experiences. I had the coming out to the girls and the coming out to the boys. Girls in my high school were, I think, really excited that I was coming out. They were so kind, so respectful. A lot of them really kind of went to bat for me in a way that was really meaningful because, you know, I've since talked to people about it because I was a weird kid for a long time. I was not really used to having friends because I didn't understand, you know, I was just like, well, I'm terrible at being a girl. I'm not very good at this. And so when I came out, all of a sudden I have all these friends and I was so excited. And I asked somebody about it at one point. I said, you know, why am I so popular now? And she said, you know, I think it's just because people aren't, you know, it was a very upper class high school, a lot of wealth, a lot of displaying your status. And so it's not an environment that breeds authenticity. And the fact that I said, consequences be damned, I'm going to come out as transgender, which people are not doing right now and are not doing here in this small town. And it kind of blew people's minds. And so everybody was just enjoyed how real I had been. So the girls were really kind and supportive. The men, boys, not men, could not have cared less. They weren't generally actively cruel about it, although there were definitely some gentlemen who did not quite like what I was doing. They let me know I was not really welcome in the locker rooms or the bathrooms. So I had a gender neutral bathroom I was able to use, and I changed in a supply room for gym class. And like, honestly, it was fine with me. I didn't want to be in the boys' locker room, and men's bathrooms smell worse, so much worse. So I was fine with it. And so I just was like, all right, you know, the guys don't really care. I think a male student probably called me Ben maybe 10 times in high school, if I'm being generous, for the year I was out. So they weren't really interested, which tends to follow trends that I see now. You know, if I speak at a company and it's a volunteer event, most of the people who show up are women. Most of the people who engage and ask questions are women, which is definitely very interesting. We could talk about that later if you want.
Actually, I want to just interject. So, are you in the process of coming out later in life? Are you feeling isolated or lost, cut off from friends and family, or just trying to figure out what is the next step for you? Well, I have a wonderful coaching program called Lotus Group Coaching. It is for people who are female identifying, cis or trans, or non-binary folks comfortable in those spaces. And we provide emotional, spiritual, and intellectual support for people who are in the process of coming out later in life. We discuss many things in our community, but what's most important is that you have a community of others who understand. Each one of the coaches in the program have come out later in life. And everybody who is a member of our program is somewhere in the process. So if you are seeking community and you want a soft place to land, go to my website, amoryzanzel.com, and book a connection call. We would love to talk to you.
My wife and I watched a new Hannah Gadsby thing on Netflix, and it's all trans comedians, trans non-binary. Yeah. It was really interesting because one of the comedians said, "Where are my gay men at?" And it was like, and then, "Where are my lesbians at?" And it was like, "Roar!" And it's funny because I do find that women are much more accepting. They are. And also we date trans men and non-binary folks. And I think it's more common than in the gay male community.
Yeah, I think there's also a big layer of respectability politics. You know, for years, the gay rights movement has, for a while, was led by gay men who said, transgender people, lesbians, if you attach yourselves to our movement, we're not going to be able to get rights. And so we're going to focus on us. And then they said, all right, you know, lesbians, I guess we can work with you. But transgender people, like, please don't attach to our movement. And then there is a view, not hugely popular. I think there are a lot of really phenomenal gay men advocates for trans folks. But there are also, you know, Gays Against Groomers is a huge group of, at its core, it's a group of gay men who said, we got our rights. But because transgender people are now attaching themselves to our community, to our movement, by saying LGBT, because you're attaching yourself, you're bringing the whole community down with you, heavy air quotes in case people are just listening to this. And you are the reason we are going to lose our marriage rights, rather than people who are saying openly, our goal the whole time has been to retract marriage rights. You know, but there is a view that transgender people are just unpalatable, are too different or too difficult. So there's the drop the T movement, which is predominantly led by gay men. Again, I am not against gay men. I am in community with so many phenomenal gay men advocates. And there's this feeling of like, your community is the reason that my rights are getting taken away, that people feel about the trans community. And so it tends to create a little bit of a divide.
But is it the trans community that's doing this, or is it the straight community that is going after the weakest link in the queer community to
I think it's
actually
absolutely
eventually
that.
Erode all queer rights.
Mm-hmm. We are just a scapegoat, a foot in the door. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's, and they start with children, which to me is untenable.
Yeah,
it really, really, that makes me as a mother. Like, if you had come after, well, one of my kids is non-binary, but they didn't come out until they were 30, but, or well, 27. But if as a parent, and if my child was small, oh my God, I would flip.
Yeah.
I would flip that,
yeah.
That, you know, I would flip. So anyway, your school was pretty good. They did a really great job. I mean, not a great job. They did a fair job.
They did the best they could with the information that was available at the time. I don't think there were amazing resources that they knew to go to. I think they really did the best that they could.
Well, I might also, my heart goes out to you though, because, you know, when you're new to all of this, you're new. And how you would respond now, 10 years later, versus how you were supposed to have all the answers when you were just figuring out that stuff. And I can see, like, you were thrown into this very adult, responsible role because you knew there were going to be other people after you. And in, like, it's like, you know, just because you come out and you're like in your first couple of years doesn't mean you know everything. And sometimes you just do, you know? And so that was hard for you. And my heart goes out for you. That must have been really like, wait a minute, I'm supposed to be the spokesman for my generation.
Yeah, it was a lot. There were times when it was a lot of pressure, especially because it wasn't just that I suspected there were people after me. From the minute I came out, there were people from my school who were messaging me and saying, hey, me too, but it's not safe yet. I need to kind of watch and see how this goes. How did it go? How was this teacher? Do you think it's safe for me to take this class? All of a sudden, all these people that I knew, I suspected, but then I knew because they were all reaching out to me, were watching. That's a lot of pressure, especially to put on a kid. And that's definitely, but I have therapy now. That's what I'll say.
So how are your mom? How are your parents?
Yeah.
Have they had ever heard anything about transgender people before they met you?
They had not really heard of it before. It was kind of new waters for everybody. So again, I use the same phrase that I use with my school, which is that they did the absolute best they could with the information that they had. They approached it with love and curiosity. And that was what I needed more than answers. They didn't know very much when I first came out, but then they both, you know, did a lot of research. We kind of describe our journey as like a bungee cord where I came out and I was like, okay, I'm ready to come out at school. And they were not ready for that. So they pulled me back, but I pulled them forward. And I said, I'm ready to talk about top surgery. And they weren't ready for that. So they pulled me back, but I pulled them forward. And so gradually we've just kind of been pulling each other along and we had to learn to communicate, right? There were moments like I wanted top surgery. I was really having a very challenging time in my body. And they were not supportive of that for a while. They were worried and they had reason to be. But we got to a point where we were really far apart on that cord. And I said, guys, I'm stretched pretty tight. I don't know how much longer this is going to be sustainable. I'm not a minor anymore. Like I don't know how much of a relationship I'm going to be able to continue to have. Okay. And they caught up, and now they are just so supportive. They're awesome advocates. So did they do everything perfect? No. Does any parent expect to get everything perfect? No, but they brought that love and that effort. And that mattered more to me than them getting it perfect, that they were trying.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And what was my third question? I just forgot it. Do you remember?
School parents.
And oh, well.
Back to it, I'm sure.
I will come back to it. So you went to college and after college, you decided to go into advocacy work. So tell us what you do now.
Yeah. So I was originally in school for elementary school teaching, which still works very effectively in corporate America. Let me tell you, a lot of tantrums. So I had an opportunity my sophomore year to give a TEDx talk just about, you know, trans allyship. And that was really fun. And I expected that to close the book on all of my advocacy so I could go focus on teaching. And instead, it like totally blew up online and all these companies found it and called me and said, hey, that was great. Do you do these presentations professionally? I said, sure, why not? So I started going around to a couple of companies. And after the third or fourth talk, I was with my dad and I said, you know, I think I have an opportunity here to do some pretty serious good. And I think I owe it to myself and to my community to try. Mm-hmm. And so it took a minute to get my parents on board. They were fine with the transition. When I told them I wanted to leave my teaching program, they were like, oh God. eventually they got on board and I changed my major and graduated early. So I did finish school, but I finished it as quickly as I could. Mm-hmm. And then I started running my own speaking business full time. So mm-hmm. I do a lot of different things. I do, you know, I'll do workplace trainings. Hey, you had a transgender team member come out. Let's talk about how to be respectful, or HR trainings. I'll also help companies write policies that are really inclusive or review their benefits. And then I do a lot of policy advocacy as well. So I live in Missouri. I'm on the board of PFLAG, which is a parent support group. So I'm our advocacy chair locally. I help parents connect to resources. And then I also spend a lot of time in the evening doing free coaching and consulting for parents who have trans kids come out. So I'll just get on the phone with them and say, all right, tell me what you're afraid of. Ask me your questions so you don't have to ask them to your kid. So I just kind of piece it together. I don't have a boss. I go wherever I feel like I can do the most good. So mm-hmm. I've been figuring that out and it's been really meaningful and impactful so far.
I can imagine. So you wrote a book about this.
Yeah.
So you said that one of the things you wanted to focus on, what's the name of the book?
My Child is Trans, Now What?
Okay. So you said that you wanted to focus in this book about more about the joy of being trans, because there is a lot of, like when a child comes out as trans, you know, a lot of parents don't understand. There's all kinds of questions. You know, of course, we've heard all the statistics that are out there regarding trans kids, and you wanted to focus on the joy. So let's talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, for a long time, I didn't really know that trans people got to be happy. I just knew that I was so miserable in the closet that I didn't feel like I had a choice but to come out. I didn't feel like I could keep living like that. So I came out, but I didn't actually know what the future held for me, because it didn't really, like, hadn't seen it on TV, hadn't seen it in the news, hadn't seen it in my life. You have to see it to be it. So I didn't really know I was going to be able to grow up. And when I talk to parents now who have a kid who's coming out, they understand the statistics are terrifying, right? We talk about suicide and depression and substance use and the overrepresentation in homelessness and how many kids get kicked out. We talk about all these anti-trans bills. So parents say, okay, you know, I have to support my kid because I can't afford not to. And that is an effective, you know, scare tactic into making sure parents know how high the stakes are. But it also means that so much of our support is focused on what are we avoiding? What are we trying to escape dysphoria and, you know, mental illness and all of these challenges that come up? We're moving away from that, but we don't know what we're moving towards. And so for a lot of parents, things like detransition or regret or those kind of boogeymen that people on the far right like to use are really effective, because we don't know what the risk, what makes the risk worth it. You know, the risk feels high and we don't actually know what we're fighting for. And so it makes sense that that is a really effective scare tactic, because people don't assume there's something, you know, bright at the end of the tunnel if the risk pays off, which it usually does based on so many studies about detransition and regret and things like that. So I really set out to focus on supporting from the subtitle is a joy-centered approach. And that doesn't mean ignoring every bad thing that happens, but it's, you know, for example, trying to learn somebody's new pronouns, having something like a misgendering squirt bottle or a misgendering jar where you put in a dollar every time you use the wrong pronouns, and then the kid gets to go out for ice cream or buy a new video game with all the money that's in the jar. You can have funny approaches to problems. You can find ways to celebrate new clothes and new hairstyles. Just finding excuses to be joyful along this journey will make it more enjoyable for everyone, because transness does not have to mean misery and suffering. You can be trans and be happy.
Well, yeah. And, you know, I've never really thought about, like, after coming out, but to me, I always thought people just wanted to live happy, productive lives.
Yeah.
You know, because it's only one, it's a big part of our personalities, but it's only one facet of our personalities.
Yeah.
You know, and so I always just, but it's, I think sometimes the the straight world, or, well, wait a minute, let me say this. The cis world can make it really hard.
Yeah.
It doesn't just have to be straight people. The cis world can make it hard for a lot of people.
Yeah. And I think there was a long time where I kind of let myself be boxed in and defined by my identity. But I decided somewhat early on that it was important to me to be not just a trans person who happened to be Ben, but Ben who happened to be a trans person. So do I talk about this a lot in my work? Yes. But when I'm socializing with my friends, most of what I talk about is being a huge nerd and my books and my video games and things that have very little to do with my trans identity. And, you know, I do political advocacy because I don't feel like I have another choice. Knowing the power that I have, knowing the impact I'm able to have for my community and with my community, I want to do that because I know I'm making a difference. But if I didn't need to do advocacy work, I would be running a bookstore or doing something, being a librarian or just going off somewhere being a nerd. And it's great to get to be trans and a whole lot of other things. That's just one adjective.
Right. So your kid comes to you and they tell you that they're trans or non-binary. And so first of all, a lot of times people don't start reading these books until like they've already sort of effed up, you know, or realize, oh God, I need some help on this and understanding about this. So if you were a new parent, besides reading your book, what would you advise like parents and family and also children, you know, the kids, like what would you advise them to do? Because, you know, finding community is, that's what I teach people how to do, is find community, because we are marginalized populations. So it's really important to have other people that understand all of this. And so let's speak to the kids first. So a kid thinks that they might be trans, you know, because when we're coming out, we're always thinking that we might be, but sometimes we just need confirmation. You know, and I don't know how trans, I know how a lot of times, like people who it's about their sexual orientation. And for a lot of us, like that's, you know, when you finally sleep with the person who's the correct gender for your sexual orientation, you're like, ah, I get it. You know, yeah. But like how about trans kids? Like how do they get confirmed in their identities or I know that there's some littles that like they know from the time they're two. You know, and so like, first of all, for the kids, what would you say?
Yeah, that's a great question.
And it doesn't matter actually if they're kids, because you can be 40 and going through this right now.
Yeah. I think, you know, what helped me a lot, and I've had a ton of people throughout my life come to me and say, I think I'm trans. What am I supposed to do?
Well, of
and
course.
Sometimes they end up coming out and sometimes they don't. I never have like an agenda with someone. I just want to help them figure it out. The biggest thing that I find is helpful is finding, whether it's just one or a handful of environments you can be in where you can experiment with being seen in different ways and you can trust that you are being seen as you are. So a great story that I think helps with this is I had a friend in college who was kind of figuring out their gender identity. And the way I met them was that in the middle of the night, somebody knocked on my door and I got up and I turned the lights on and I opened the door and I said, hello, I've never seen this person before. And they said, are you Ben? I heard you can help me. I've got some questions I need to figure out. And I said, absolutely, come on in. So my roommate started making some tea. They were well accustomed to this being the flow of our dorm at this point. And I said, okay. So we started by just talking. I asked questions like, you know, if you could press a button and everybody that you knew would see you as a different gender identity and would call you those words and would respect that identity, would you press that button? Or I just say, you know, how do you see yourself in a dream world? How do you want to be seen? And then I might say, okay, do you want to try on some of my clothes? You want to put on a suit? Want to put on a button down? Want to see how that feels? Want to put on my roommate's dress? Like, see what feels good, what feels best in your body when you know that I'm going to give you affirming compliments, you know, when you are not bound by shame of what if I'm wrong, what if I look silly, when you're in a safe environment to try new makeup, you know, drawing a little beard on myself was really helpful in me figuring out my identity because I was just like, it feels silly. It felt really shameful at the time, but it was really meaningful for me to do that and then be like, oh, wow. Yeah, I kind of feel like I'm supposed to look this way. Mm-hmm. So having those safe environments to explore and to play and to not be afraid to be wrong. Detransition is used as like a hammer against our community, but it's not a horrible thing for someone to say, I'm continuing to explore. And I've heard other phrases like retransition, where we're just on a journey. If I happened to say, actually identify as female, which for me, I feel pretty solid in my identity, but it wouldn't be going back on these 10 years I've spent living as a man. It would just me be saying, and my journey continues. We'll see where it takes me. So don't be afraid to be wrong. Find people who make you feel seen and who give you space to play and to explore and who see you as you are. Don't rush yourself to find the label that feels perfect. You'll know when it's there.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's funny because sometimes I with the women I work with when they're coming out later in life, like they'll date women for a while and then they'll say, maybe I'm not gay. Maybe I'm bisexual. You know, they're just like trying to figure it out. And what I say is, date a couple guys and see if it feels good to you. And I had one friend, you know, she came out about the same time I did, and she was struggling and she'd been dating and she was like, she's very high powered. And so she goes, maybe I'm, you know, who knows? Maybe I, and I said, go date some men. And she did. And she goes, nope, I'm a lesbian. But you know, there's nothing wrong with going to explore something. And I agree with you. Like if you have transit, like my oldest daughter, and this is really cool about them. Her ex-boyfriend, their best friend from college transitioned to being, to Zoe. And Zoe now is detransitioned and goes by they, them pronouns. But it's just their journey. That's just the journey. And if you take this journey and you're like, well, wait a minute, this doesn't feel right, then it's okay. There's no huge sin. You can stop taking the hormones.
Exactly. I have friends who have stopped taking hormones, not a huge amount of friends.
But
they say, I'm not against everyone taking hormones. I just, you know, I didn't want to do it. And that's great. You got to figure out what feels right to you.
Right. Absolutely. Okay. Mom and dad, family. So there's two kinds of families, I would assume. Maybe there's even more. There's the families that are like, I love my child. I want to be supportive. I don't know what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. And then there's the family, this is a sin against God. Mm-hmm. And that's much deeper and harder to deal with. And most likely those parents won't be reading your book. Mm-hmm. So the first, you know, the first family where they're just like, I know this is going out in the world. I didn't expect it to come in my door, because mm-hmm. what I have found, people, is that I find that people can be really great allies to the queer community until it comes through their door. Mm-hmm. When their child comes out, when their kid is all of a sudden non-binary or trans, they're really great allies, but then it's in their house and they're like, oh, wait a minute. And so I have seen I have had clients that are young, like 30, and they're very progressive parents who used to lead like the GSL at school. Don't like the fact that their child's gay.
Yeah, it feels different when it's your kid.
Right, right. So what kind of advice would you talk to parents that are just trying to figure it all out?
Yeah, I think the biggest one. So there's a metaphor that people love to use, this metaphor, and I'm a big metaphors guy. So I like to expand on the metaphor of a roller coaster. People love to say, you know, a roller coaster of emotions is a really common phrase. And, you know, it describes that there are twists and turns. There are times when it's really fun and times when you are definitely up and times when you do throw up. And there are so many things about a roller coaster that are terrifying, but I want to expand that metaphor a little bit. I think about the first person to ever go on a roller coaster. I have to assume they thought they were going to die. And maybe they did. Roller coasters, I don't know who came up with them. That's a crazy idea. Seems terrifying. I'm not a roller coasters guy, but some people love them, but they're horrifying. Yeah. But people love them. And every time, you know, my family goes to a theme park, and usually I'm like standing and holding the bags, but I'll be standing and holding the bags and I'll see a whole family come out of the exit and they're laughing and they're looking at the picture they took. And maybe there's even a kid laughing. And I'm like, well, wait, it was so fun for you all. Maybe it would be fun for me. Mm-hmm. And with thinking about transition and that roller coaster that we go on, the reason we go on roller coasters is because we see people getting off on the other side smiling. We know that people have survived this ride before. A big part of why it feels so scary to have a kid come out is because it feels like you are so alone. It feels like you are reinventing the wheel. You don't know who you can trust. You have to reevaluate a lot of your relationships, a lot of the way you interact with your kids, interact with the world. Like my family had to have a different way to plan our trips because there were states I wasn't safe to go to anymore. And, you know, all of a sudden things were really different. So it's terrifying to feel like you're the first person doing that. So finding as much support as you can, and specifically community in your local area, whether it is a chapter of PFLAG, which is a national support organization, or just a therapist or one friend, being not alone in this, realizing that you don't have to start from square zero because, you know, you're not the first one. Even if you don't know of anybody else, you're not the first one. Finding that community is such an amazing way to work through the big emotions that come up, to talk to people who have been where you are, to get referrals for great doctors, and just to remember that you're not on this ride alone.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So in your TED Talk, you sort of framed it around giving advice to allies. And can you give that advice? You had four pieces. Do you remember it all?
That was 2018. Huh?
The four pieces of advice, which I think is, you know, about asking questions. Most of the people that listen to this podcast are queer. So would you have different pieces of advice for the queer community versus people that are in the straight community?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think for those that are in the queer community, remembering that we all have the ability and need to give and receive allyship. I think that is something that people can get really in the mindset of, like, I need to receive allyship, or I only need to give and receive allyship. I only need to receive allyship from the straight community. I don't need to give it within my own community. But, you know, am I a trans person? Do I need allyship from my LGB folks? Yes. I'm also a man. Do I need to give allyship to my lesbian and bi and queer women in my community? Yes. I'm also a white trans person. Do I need to give allyship to trans people of color? Yes. To trans people who are disabled. So we have to really think of our community as all being connected to each other. Even if you don't feel like a bill targeting the trans community is about you, there are plenty of bills that don't directly impact me. When they come for one of us, they come for all of us. So to my queer folks, I say, just, you know, we're arm in arm. Look to your right. I'm standing there. I'm with you. I need to know you're with me too. So I think, yeah, building that community.
When I was a new queer person, I really didn't understand why the T was in the LGBT.
Yeah.
And, but then I began to realize, being in a queer relationship, about how the roles assigned that I was in when I was in my heteronormative relationship, there were definitely roles assigned. And in a queer relationship, gender doesn't matter as much.
Yeah.
And so my wife and I, our role, like, there's no assigned roles based on gender. And that's when it sort of clicked with me why the T was in the, you know, why it was included. And now when I do all my work, I always say, you know, sexual and or gender orientation, because what has happened is with the women I work with, I have had a handful that have started out coming out later in life as a lesbian. But as time has gone on, they realize it's more about gender for them. And I currently have a couple of people that are identify as non-binary, and I don't know where they'll end up. But would you add anything to that?
Yeah. You know,
because I really thought about this a lot and trying to figure it out. And am I missing something? That's, I guess.
Yeah. I think that's great. The big things I would just add, you know, historically, I think a lot of the association came from the ways that queer people took care of each other during the AIDS epidemic. because AIDS really predominantly was impacting the gay community and the trans community, we had no choice but to take care of each other. And there is so much overlap between the ways we play with gender, the ways we play with sexuality, you know, the different dynamics and the ways those show up with us. So I fully agree with you. I think there are times where I'm like, I wonder what the association is. And on paper, they aren't quite connected. Mm-hmm. I tell people all the time, gender and sexuality are different. And on paper, they're different. But when I talk to people, when I am just looking at my community, when I am talking about one person with one messy experience of the world, gender and sexuality do interconnect with each other. They relate to each other. My sexuality is very connected to my gender, not just in a, you know, sexual sense, but just in a, the way I experience relationships is very connected to my trans identity. So many of us have been persecuted for the same reasons by the same people. I think a big part of it now is just that we share common attackers. So it makes sense that we have a unified front.
Yeah.
And have historically had a variety of common enemies. So I think there are a lot of reasons for us to stick together. The biggest of which just being we're stronger that way as a community.
Well, absolutely.
You know who it would help to divide.
And for me, it's about justice. And like, honestly, because why would we treat anybody less than human? Why would we take rights away from human beings? Like, to me, and maybe, you know, it's like, even when I was living my straight life, I always thought like that, but I think I always thought like a queer, even though I was living my straight life, you know, and I didn't realize it, but I, like, to me, it's just like basic common humanity. Like we treat everybody with dignity and not try to, it drives me crazy when state legislatures try to legislate medical decisions like abortion, like, you know, trans kids and their access to medication. And also right now we're doing the in vitro, but that's going to get the straights involved and then people will get pissed off.
That's such a great point you bring up too. When we're thinking about abortion bans, when we're thinking about CRT bans, it's the same people who are doing those bans, listing out the same reasons for doing all variety of hateful things. So all people who are marginalized, we are being marginalized together. We are arm in arm. You know, I had my first Pride Month as a public speaker was June of 2020. I don't know if you remember June of 2020, but what we were talking about was not LGBT Pride Month. We were talking about George Floyd and racial equity. And there was a minute I was in an interview in like September of that year. And I had spent most of that month, you know, doing a lot of my own learning and helping, you know, take into the streets and getting involved however I could. And I had somebody in the interviews that said, were you frustrated that you didn't feel like you got to, like, we didn't really celebrate Pride in 2020? And I said, no, it didn't even occur to me to be mad. And it surprised me that someone would ask me that question, because I said, we're arm in arm. My liberation is bound up in yours, as they say. And, you know, I was fighting not just for Black queer people, which there are Black queer people that I'm fighting for, but for all people who are marginalized by racial oppression, by, you know, disability justice. I have recognized that we are being oppressed for many of the same reasons by many of the same people using the same skills and the tools. So if we want to effectively win those battles, we have to acknowledge that we're all on each other's team. So I try my best to be on as many teams as I can be.
I love that. So Ben, I ask three questions at the end of every podcast. And so did you have a coming out song?
Yes, I did. Not only did I have a coming out song, I actually named myself after my coming out song. I listened to the song Riptide by Vance Joy with a good friend of mine who for a while I was only out to one person. And so we would listen to Riptide whenever we were alone together, just because it's a fun song and it reminded us that we were loved and had people. He was actually coming out at the same time and had only come out to me. So that just got us through those really dark, lonely times. And then when I was picking my name, I decided to make my middle name Vance, just as a reminder of the person and the song that got me through that time. And as a reminder that I will always, you know, be loved by people around me.
Does Vance Joy know this?
I don't know. I made a TikTok about it, but I don't know if he saw it. One day, yeah. I hope he finds out.
Well, we're going to get him to know that.
I hope so.
So a movie or a book that changed your perspective on life?
I think the really anything by Becky Chambers, but especially A Psalm for the Wild Built, is she created a kind of new genre called solar punk or hope punk. I don't actually know if she was the very first one, but she really popularized it. And she was also the first author of queer books I had ever read. And so Psalm for the Wild Built is a short novella about a non-binary tea monk who is, you know, figuring out what they want to do with their life and what brings them joy. It is in a post-apocalyptic where things are kind of getting better now. The apocalypse worked and, you know, humanity is healing. And it's a very simple story that is just about finding what brings you comfort and what brings you joy and being hopeful. And, you know, again, thinking about what do we move towards, not just what do we move away from. And so, to see a trans character in a science fiction book blew my mind and really created a love of science fiction and fantasy, has made me love writing science fiction and fantasy stories. And also just the hopefulness in that story was so palpable and really kind of defined my philosophy that I will always have hope. No matter what, I'm going to find a way to be hopeful because I know what I'm dreaming of. I know what world I'm fighting for. And that really helps me keep going. And it helps me honor the role that peace and relaxation has in my day and in my fight and in my advocacy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's really important. If you're going to be doing the work you're doing, is to have your moments of peace.
And yeah.
You really need that, because if you're on fire all the time, you're going to get burnt out.
And yeah, absolutely.
Metaphor there.
Marathon, not
an unintentional metaphor, but you know, you will get burnt out if you're always working towards this. You're always spending time thinking about it. Because if you, it can get overwhelming at times. And so like taking that time to be peaceful and to be joyful and to take time off from advocacy work and speaking and being a visible figure within the community is really super important.
Yeah, sometimes I just want to go and be a little silly, and that's okay. That's important.
So how would you describe your life today, Ben?
Yeah, I think I'm in my element. I'm in my power. I am really living the life of the person I needed when I was younger. You know, I do everything I can to support trans kids. I have a dog. That was a big thing for me when I was younger that I knew I needed. You know, I'm so fortunate that I get to be the person I wish I had. I get to be a person who talks to kids' parents so that they don't have to have the perfect answers to their questions. And I get to build those supportive systems. And I really try to find joy everywhere I can, whether that's in building community or in my marriage or in just the little things that I do throughout my day to remind me that things are going to be okay and that I get to be a part of this fight and that there are victories. We are winning lots of battles in this war. You know, I try to be really joyful and I try to know where I'm able to have the most impact. So I really feel like I've hit my stride and found where I get to make the most difference.
And you're only 24.
Yeah.
Which is amazing. It will change 100 times between now and the next 40 years. But
exactly.
Who knows? There may always be an advocacy. But it's really nice to be in that place when you're in your 20s. Because a lot of times people, that's a real hard time for a lot of people.
Yeah.
They're just floundering and they're not really sure where they all fit.
It and feels it's really good nice to know I have found a purpose.
Yeah, you found your purpose. Okay. Now is the time for blatant self-promotion. Go.
Okay,
where can people find you? Where's your books? All those
Please
things.
Buy my book. My book is anywhere they sell books. And if they're not selling my book and you ask them, then they will. So please ask your local bookstore and your local library to carry my book, which is called My Child is Trans, Now What? You can find me on social media at pseudobro, PSEUDOBRO, because I am your trans older brother and I make a lot of cute content on Instagram and TikTok. You can also find my website, bgtranstalks.com, where I can talk to you about speaking and other ways I might be able to support your workforce, your company, your family, anything I can do to lift you up. I want to be here. I want to be a resource. Let me know how I can help you and I'll be here.
Well, Ben, it was really nice to get to know another Connecticut Yankee.
Absolutely.
And I really want to thank you for your time today and the education and the story that you provided.
Thank you so much for having me. This was really wonderful.
You've been listening to Coming Out and Beyond, LGBTQIA+ Stories with Anne-Marie Zanzel. New episodes of the Coming Out and Beyond podcast drop every other Friday. You can tune in at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and at annemariezanzel.com. Be sure to hit subscribe when tuning in so you never miss an episode. And for more resources, articles, videos, and a free downloadable guide for coming out later in life, visit annemariezanzel.com.